You're now listening to the Inside Out Podcast with Jimmy Hunt. Get it.
Welcome to Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt. My job is simple: to improve my mental fitness through any means possible and deconstruct what works, what doesn't, and what I think may be able to help you become mentally fitter. And quite often, it leads me to some pretty interesting people, places, and stories. And today, we have one of those pretty interesting people with us. Her name is Lisa O'Neill. I met her at a conference one day, and she's kind of like me. She speaks to a lot of people and helps them live happier, healthier lives. She's written 6 books, I think. And she also introduced me to the organization that she's now a CEO of, which is the organization that fundamentally changed the way I think and the way I do business. And it's called the Thought Leaders Business Academy. We're not going to talk about much about that today, but worth checking out. If you think about things deeply, you should check that out. Lisa, welcome to my humble little podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
You are most welcome. What I want to talk to you about today is sort of the topic of 1/2 of your books, because why not get a 2-for-1 special here today? And one is called Everything You Want. And basically, you claim that there are 6 foundations that we need to address to live a full and happy life. And so what I would like to do is talk to you about that. And you've got another book that I like, which is 50 Things I Now Know, because you've turned 50. I'm 42. I think we've both got to a place where we know a few things, especially compared to what we used to know. And it fundamentally impacts the way we live now, which I think is really important. So I'll just start off, Lisa, by asking 6 fundamental ways in order to live the life that you want. You have to let me in on a secret and tell me 1 or 2 of those.
Yeah. Well, I created this from watching people. I would just, especially people who were trying to have, so I work predominantly with people who want to have big lives or who want to change their lives. I'm not really interested in people that want to be average. I'm not really interested in people that are just floating around letting the world happen to them. I kind of am interested in the people that are pushing and shoving and wanting to do more or have more. And I don't think people believe they can have everything they want. I was raised by a ridiculously positive father who believed in the power of sort of doing whatever you wanted. So he was just, I was marinated in self-belief from a really early age. Like, so I was basically raised to believe that I could do, be, or have anything, and I had no limits and no boundaries, which is a pretty extraordinary way to come into the world back in 1970 in New Zealand. And so that was a bit of a gift in itself. And then I looked around and there was all these people that were so limited. And I'm like, why are you all not doing what you want? And why are you all buying into all this stuff that you can't have this or you can't do that or you can't do this or you're not good enough to do that? And I was like, what is wrong with you all? And then when I got out in the world, I realized that most of the people were like that. So I thought, maybe I could help out with that. And I think love is the biggest thing. And I'm writing another book about that. That's another story. Cool. At the moment, but I think the most important things as humans we want is most of us want, we want energy. Like, energy is really, I believe, all we have and all we are. So energy, I think, is really important. I think control is really important, but controlling the right stuff, yeah, and not everything. I tried. I'm a reformed control freak. So, you know, I tried to control everything, and then I had 4 teenagers, and that blew that out the window. So that's been useful. I think taking action is something that every human wants, and we get paralyzed by either not good enough or perfectionism or whatever bullshit thing we've signed up for that we believe we can't do things for. And yeah, so, and then this trust, which I think we all want to trust. Most of us just need to learn to trust ourselves. That's the biggest thing, I think. And we want to be able to trust the universe and trust the government and trust the people. And, you know, if you live in a world where you don't trust anyone or anything, it's a pretty horrible way to live. So I think deciding what you trust and how you trust and leaning into that is big. And then there's good old freedom, you know, freedom. For me, freedom's not having to do stuff. is more than just getting to do stuff. I think people go, oh, freedom's doing what you want. And I'm like, yeah, freedom's saying, nah, I don't want to do that. I don't have to do stuff, right? And, you know, I know you love that. It's like, no, this is the way I'm going to live my life. And I'm going to say no to all this stuff that doesn't suit me. And that's how you do freedom. And a lot of people think, I think freedom is saying yes to everything. And I'm like, what if it was saying yes to just what you wanted? You know, the freedom to go, not going to work Mondays and Fridays. I'm not going to travel. I'm not, what are you not going to do? I think that's such a big question, because we all grow up with these expectations and get trained in our training of being someone, that we get trained that you have all the stuff you have to do. And you're like, well, what if I didn't? And I know you're a poster boy for that. So I love that. Like, I love that. What if I didn't? What if I didn't do it? What if I didn't have to do it? And then there's joy. Like, I don't think enough people know. And I even get people say to me, what do you mean by joy? I'm like, well, it's like bigger than happiness. It's the thing that you can lose yourself in. It's what's the thing that floats your boat. And if you don't know that, I think that's a really, I don't think it's a really great way to live, if you don't actually know what is it that brings you joy. And it doesn't have to be, it could be your dog. It could be having a coffee in the morning, staring into the eyes of a dog. It could be, you know, meditating on a mountain. I don't care what it is, just something. Whatever it is, it could be eating macaroni cheese on a Sunday night, you know. It's like whatever brings you joy, just do that. And I think people look for things that are too big in that, you know, like they go way up here in the big. I'm like, well, what if it was something, what if it was, I talk a lot about pockets of perfect, and what was it, just a little pocket, like a little coffee or just a smile with a stranger when, you know, when you see someone and you witness something and you know that that other person just saw what you saw. And I love those little moments. It's like, oh, maybe it's just human moments. I don't know. But I think they are the six things that everyone wants. So energy, control, action, trust, freedom, and joy, I think is what we're looking for. And I don't think we know how to get it. So the other half of that book is the six things you need to sort out to get to those six. So there's actually 12. It's not quite as simple, you know.
Yeah.
So then the six things that get you to the middle of that and what that's about.
Yeah, well, I think that's, I mean, it's something that we touched on before I pushed record, in that most of us don't have the self-awareness to be able to understand what we're missing and what else we could have. And so even just laying out those six things for people can flick some switches, can allow them to go, oh, yeah, I haven't thought about it that way. Do I actually have joy? Maybe I don't really, because I think, especially with the joy, a lot of us chase the happiness. And in the chasing of the happy, we completely miss all of the joy. And it is because happy tends to be a destination for people, whereas joy is a present moment experience that we can have at almost any time if we choose to.
Yeah, and I think people are so busy trying to be happy that they miss the joy, ironically, right?
Yeah.
They miss the joy. And joy for me, like if I had to sit down and go, what's the most joyful moments in my last week? You know, it can be anything from just like watching a bird sitting on my lemon tree. Like that, you know, it can be really trivial. My husband's really worried that I'm about to retire or something because I'm into watching birds. And he's like, oh, I think you're too young for that. Like, can we do that when you're 70? But I'm like, oh, look at the little wax eye. And he's like, oh, shut up. Like, you're like an old person. But I do love, yeah, I'm in awe of nature. So I do love that. But I think there's so much in joy and just those little moments, and we just don't notice them, and we don't clock them, and we don't bank them. So I think clocking and banking joy of going, what was a moment that you clocked today that was just beautiful? What was that moment? Like, and it might be me and my 19-year-old daughter singing really badly at the top of our lungs to some song, you know, while we're driving. It could just be that moment. And then we might have fought the rest of the trip. But that one moment when we were both just singing and really in the moment of some crazy song, or, you know, just those little, I think little clocking joy is a thing, right?
Yeah, well, the word, you know, the term clocking joy really is about conscious awareness of joy. And unless we're looking for it, we can very easily just unconsciously go about our day and not clock any of it. And so what I do when I teach this on my walks, and that is that we are looking for moments of wonder. And so when we're walking, it's like we need to find them. Like, this is our job. We're treasure hunters, and we're looking for moments of wonder. And the other day I found a butterfly that's completely black and has about 8 little pink hearts down the back of its on its back. Absolutely wow. Fucking amazing. I tried to take some photos of it. They're blurry because it was fluttering a lot. But what a just a piece of wonder, a black butterfly with these little pink hearts on them, like perfectly formed hearts. And I'm just like, whoa, like this is wonderful. And it can be as simple as a butterfly or a bird on a lemon tree or a view or a feeling or a taste or a smell or any of these things. But without the conscious acknowledgement of them, it's very, very, very hard for us to experience that joy.
Mm, I love that. I love the word wonderful. And when I wrote my second book, I used the word careful and I spelt it care and then full, F-U-L-L. And the editor kept coming back and saying, you spelt careful wrong. It only has one L. And I was like, no, I'm not talking about being careful. I'm talking about being careful, being full of care. And for me, wonderful means to be full of wonder, right? And so it's like wonderful. Yeah. So if you put two L's on wonderful, it becomes full of wonder, which I think is the whole point. But people go, oh, wonderful. And I'm like, but was it wonderful? Were you really full of wonder? And when you see a butterfly with pink bloody love hearts on it, you are literally in that moment full of wonder, which is, like you say, it's wonderful. And I'm a bit of a word junkie, so I love playing with words and I love the meaning of words and I love the idea of going, yeah, but what would it really mean to be full of wonder? And it's like, ooh, I could talk about that for days. Yeah.
Well, thank you, because I'm stealing that from my books. I appreciate you lending it to me.
No, take it, because full of wonder, I do wonderful, careful, they're all full, words that are full. And when you're full of care, it's completely different than being careful of, don't touch the stove, burn yourself. It's actually, I care so deeply for you, I do not want you to burn yourself, and please be aware of the stove. And it's a different, I'm into full. I love full stuff. I'm a maximalist, so I love everything to be full. I'm really into full. Like, I'm the complete opposite of a minimalist. I don't believe in skimpy. I don't want, I'm into fullness and everything in my life is full. Like, I love big furniture and big stuff and big everything. So I like big, you know?
Yes. A little bit the opposite to me, but that's what makes the world so beautiful. Now, without glossing over it, what I find and what I especially try to do in this podcast is that it's very easy to paint the picture of wonderful, a wonderful life, a happy, a healthy life. And we've done that with the six, but I am definitely interested in having a chat about how do we get people from one place to another? What are some of the things that we can do? I mean, we talk about it just in terms of the joy there, being in that conscious acknowledgement of going for a walk, looking for the wonderful, you know, that's a very practical thing that we can do to find that joy and find that wonder. What are some of your other six that you use to get people from one place to the other?
Yeah, well, I think there's so much in that. Like, there's so proactive health is a big thing for me. Like, I really think proactive health is something that everyone benefits from, and
mental fitness,
being
as
compared to reactive health. Yeah. So being proactive, right? Like, just going, okay, what am I doing about what? Like, I'm always ahead of my health, as in, so when I turned 50, I literally had everything checked. I'm like, right, I need to get ahead of all this. I want blood tests. I want everything tested. I want hair follicle testing. I want all this testing done. How does my body respond to these things? And what puts my body in optimal conditions for me, right? And I think we all have different ways our bodies respond. Some bodies like heat. Some bodies need lots of sleep. You know, everyone's got a different, I think of your body as a rental car. So we're all driving a different rental car and we all need different things to make that rental car work. But I think being proactive around your health instantly changes, because when you feel good, everything's easier. You know, when you feel shitty, I mean, life is hard, right? When you're not well or you're tired or you're under the weather or whatever's going on, it's really hard to lead an amazing life when you feel shitty. And if you've got a sore knee or a sore back or a headache or a bloody whatever is going on, very hard to feel good. So I think proactive health's a massive one.
That's why I live in Mexico, right? Because yeah. I don't like the cold. And so in the middle of the night, in the middle of winter, the coldest it gets here is 21 degrees Celsius. Like, I never have to be cold. I never have to put on a sweatshirt. Right?
Yeah.
And my body responds to that really well.
Exactly. So that's the awareness of what does Jimmy's body need? How yeah. can Jimmy give his body the best conditions for Jimmy's world? Move it to Mexico, right?
Yeah.
Now, my body would drop dead in Mexico full yeah. time because I hate the heat. And yeah. so I'm like, I don't want anything to do with hot places. I literally don't intentionally ever go anywhere that's over 22 degrees. Like anything over 22 and I'm grumpy, I'm awful, I'm hot and sweaty and red and I have no interest in it. I hate it. So yeah. I just don't take myself places. People say, well, you know, come to Melbourne in February. No, I won't, right? No, I'm not interested. I just came back from America and I planned my trip to the States and to Canada all based around pretty much the time of year and the temperature it was going to be because I'm better at my temperature. So even knowing your temperature, like knowing how much sleep, like you and I probably have completely different sleep needs as well. How many hours do you need to sleep? How many hours do I? Everyone needs to know this shit. Yeah. And if you know the specs of what makes you work, you've got such a better chance of making your life work better by going, oh, I don't know. And it's like even the food you eat, right? Like what foods work for you, what foods don't. People go, oh, I feel terrible every time I eat dairy. I'm like, yep, but here we are and you're swallowing another jug of milk. Like, what are you doing? It's yeah. such a sabotage. As in once you're aware of it, to continue doing it, to me, that's just stupidity. But, you know, whatever it is that makes you feel amazing, I think you should do that. And I think that covers energy and health because it's so important that those two, I mean, they're so connected, those things, I think.
I agree.
And energy too, as well. Yeah.
Like I can absolutely function perfectly well multiple days in a row on 5 hours sleep. Like yeah. just, yeah, sure, I'm absolutely fine. My wife has a minute less than 8 hours sleep and nah, like that's not a thing. And
I'm, the same, she has I'm exactly the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so she has foods that she can eat. And if she eats them, game over. Like her body just doesn't work for a day. Whereas I can eat anything I want at any time and I'm like, I'm fine. And so it is that awareness. I mean, we don't have to wait till we're 50 to have that full health check, but we also don't have to go and do all of the actual medical testing. We can really just break down the things that make us feel optimal.
It's just a case of noticing. It's just noticing, yeah. you know, noticing and nourishing. So noticing what works for you, what doesn't work for you, I think is such a thing. And it doesn't cost anything to notice. Like, it's like, just notice, like notice what works for you. And then, you know, be aware of when you're good and where you're not. And if that's, you know, I remember years ago doing shit like food diaries. What did I eat that made me feel amazing? What did I eat that made me, all that sort of crap. I just now just bank it and go, oh yeah, I just ate, what did I eat 3 hours ago that now I feel like shit or why am I tired or, you know, what's yeah. happened. But noticing and just nourishing yourself, because I think it's your job to nourish yourself. No one else is going to do it for you unless you're still living at home with mummy. So you need to notice and you need to nourish and give yourself the best chance of having the best day by feeding yourself whatever works for you, you know?
Yeah. No, I like it. And it's just very, that's what I love about both what you and I do is that it's not fucking rocket science.
Not at all. It's so simple.
It's just simple, conscious awareness of particular things that are happening in your life. And when you, again, I like you too, when you clock those things, when you're like, oh, that's a thing, then you have a basis plan where you can now make all the decisions based off the back of that. Now, you know that milk is going to give you the shits and you're lactose intolerant, and then you consciously going, well, don't really feel like that cheese today. And you want to swap that cheese deliciousness for an hour on the toilet consciously, then go ahead.
Yeah, knock yourself out, right? But don't complain about it because you've just done that to yourself. So I totally agree. And it's like, and being, having the awareness of, is it worth it? Yes or no. And I think there's so much in that. And we've all got different set points, right? So we've all got different, like you say, different sleep, different things we can eat. Some people, like with time. So I think time's another one that's really important. Appreciating and valuing time, because time's the only thing you're not getting back. Right. So if you've got time to spend an hour on the toilet because you took part in a large piece of camembert, then good for you. But don't, if you don't have time, see, I don't have time. I find it unbelievably inefficient for my body not to work. So I'm like, what can I do at any one time to make me more efficient? Because I'm so obsessed with packing as much into my life as possible that I want to use my life and my time really well. And I go, oh, I just want to use my time well. I'm really respectful of how much time I have and how valuable time is. And it's like whenever I'm, you know, doing something like this with you or I'm speaking at an event, I'm really honored by the time, because the time people are taking to listen to this podcast, they never get this time back. No. So it's like, it's my major push to produce value at all times, because I'm like, you people aren't getting this hour back of your lives. So we need to do a really good job, Jimmy, so that they're not wasting their time, because otherwise you're not helping, right? You're part of the problem. And I think the time is so important. And if you're going to have a terrible day because you didn't sleep enough the night before, it's a waste of your time. So I think time's a really big piece. And that's another thing. I'm like, how in charge of your time are you? Yeah. And, you know, how much control you have in your life is a direct relationship to how happy you are generally. So if you've got a charge, you know, when you've got, like I know when I had little babies, you're not in control. You know, you've got no blood control. No. You have a small sausage-shaped human that's running your life. And so you don't get to be in charge of how much sleep you get. You don't get to be in charge of anything, of even whether you shower. Because like they're so in charge, and it's like you just lose all control, which is a really interesting space to be in. And it's something you have to learn to accept. And I had to, that was a really good learning for me as a parent to go, I'm not in charge. Like, you know, it's even when you go on holiday with a 3-year-old, you think you're in charge, you're not in charge. Bloody 3-year-old's in charge.
Not at all.
Right.
No, I like that. I like that because one, it's so true. But that's why whenever I have a guest on this podcast, I'm very much about not letting them ramble about whatever it is they're talking about pulling it back and going, what does this fucking mean to me? If I'm listening to this podcast, I don't care about your life story. I care about the value that I'm getting and how my life is going to change because I've spent this time on this podcast. Now, if you want to just be a straight entertainment podcast, sure, go ahead. Like, just your job is to waste that person's hour because they're choosing to waste that hour. But if they're going to listen to, you know, whatever, self-improvement podcast, you better be able to leave here going, well, that was time well spent and my life is going to be better because I spent that time with you guys. A friend of mine, Richard Buckthorpe, my first boss at this bar that I worked in my first year at uni, a couple of years into it, he said to me, Jimmy, I've got a lot of time for you. And I realized many years later that it's the most beautiful compliment anybody could ever give anyone at any time. Because, oh, there's a shitload of people I've got no time for. And then there's people that I have so much time for you. I have all the time in the world for you if you require it. And so, like, just the conscious acknowledgement of that again allows us to make better choices in our life in order to get better outcomes.
Yeah, I think it's lovely. And it's like, and being honest with yourself, who do you have time for? And who don't you have time for? And who is wasting your time? Like, I've had friends who, you know, every single week they come to me with the same story, the same problem, the same bullshit. And I'm like, mate, we're just going around and around and around and you're not doing anything about it. You're really committed to your unhappiness and you just want to whinge. And I don't have time for this. I've got all the time in the world for any friend who's in a pickle and wants to unravel their pickle or wants hand. But when you just got the same, when you're serving me the same dish fuck, I got no, I'm out, I'm done. Like, go away and sort your shit out and come back to me, because you're just going around and around. And I love that saying, I love the name asshole, when someone's just constantly asking and doing nothing, they become an asshole. And it's so true. They're like, oh, what shall I do? And I'm like, oh, about what? The same problem you had last week, that you've got no boundaries with your teenage son and you want to whinge about it again. And I'm just like, you know. Well, that's, I think that's, we all get to whinge once. Once and then do something.
Correct. And it's the old Einstein quote, which is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Yeah.
And that's the asshole. The asshole is the person just doing the same shit and going, why is nothing changing?
Yeah, because maybe because you're not.
Yeah, that's it. If we want a different outcome, we need to have a different behavior. And the only way we can get a different behavior is being aware of the current behavior and then making a conscious choice to change that behavior. That's it.
Which comes back to awareness again, though, right? Because you've got to be aware that you're being an asshole and that you are, you know, I really like the idea of actually sometimes we can't always be aware. And that's where, if you surround yourself with the right people, I think that's fantastic. I remember being on a family holiday and I took about half an hour out of my day where I was staying in Wanaka to meet up with a friend. And this friend said to me, hey, I'm in Wanaka. And I was like, oh, I'm kind of in the middle of all this family stuff, but yeah, cool. I'd love to catch up with you. And I said, all right, let's meet here. So we met and I was like in this full blah, blah, blah about, oh, all these people were pissing me off and this wasn't working and that wasn't working. And he just went, wow, you're being a real bitch. And I went, am I really? And he went, 100%. What is wrong with you? He said, I've never seen you like this. You're being horrible. And I went, oh, shit. Fuck, thanks for that, because I actually had no idea. I thought everyone else had a problem. And he goes, no, it's all you. It's all you, man. And I was like, oh, I'm so, and I've got about four people in my life that will do that for me. And I'm so grateful to those people who will go, no, actually, you're way out of line and you're just being a muppet right now. And I'm like, oh, thank you. Because it's such a gift so for people to stand up.
There's a really, Tasha Yurich, you know Tasha, she wrote the book Insight. In that book, she has sort of the perfect protocol for that. And you have what she calls four loving critics, right? And so a loving critic, and this is something that I've taught on this podcast before, and I am happy to do it again because it's so important. A loving critic is someone who has to have three things. You have to have mutual respect for each other.
Yeah.
They have to have your best. They have to have your best interest at heart, and they have to be willing to tell you the truth. Right? Yeah. Now, if they're willing to tell you the truth, but they don't have your best interest at heart, they're just a fucking critic. And quite often, whether it's a friend or an intimate partner or something like that, quite mutual level of respect. Yep, absolutely. Have your best interest at heart. Absolutely. Willing to tell you the truth? Fuck no, because I don't want the wrath that comes back at me when I'm able to do that, right? And so loving critics are the absolute gold standard for being able to obtain external self-awareness. And that's what they're giving you. They're giving you self-awareness that you are unable to get internally yourself. And that is one of the most valuable things you can have in your life.
Oh, so such a gift.
You've already done it, but all of us need to make sure we've got those three or four loving critics that are ready to, you know, be able to call us out on our shit.
Yeah, 100%. And I can ring any of them and go, hey, this is what's going on. Am I out of line? And I go, yeah, you're way out of line. I go, okay, cool thing. Okay, good. Thanks. Just checking. And it's really nice because we kind of use each other for that. And I think having someone that will honestly go, actually, no, I think that's really not okay. And I'm like, okay, good. Good. Thank you.
Do you know the best one I got from my loving critic, Sally? Just fucking brutal. She says to me one day, Jimmy, people love you. Oh, cool. Thanks. Like, people love you despite you. And I was like, ooh, fuck. I feel that. I get that. I see that. And, you know, that was probably 10 years ago, and I still feel that, and I still make sure that now people aren't loving me despite the way I'm acting. People are loving me because of the way I'm acting. But that was a really strong eye-opener for me. And the only reason, so I mean, people have called me an asshole or a dickhead before that, but they're just critics. So you don't take that on board.
No.
But when it's a
there's got to be that mutual critic, respect, right? Because when it's a mutual respect, like this guy who said this to me this day, I'm like, hey, I love him and he loves me and we're really good mates. And I know he's really smart. He's really onto it. And when he said it, I was like, oh no, like if you're saying that, I'm in deep trouble.
I need to check myself before I regularly wreck myself.
Yeah, I love that. That's so good. So, yeah, I think they're all really good tactics. I think the other one I use all the time is you're checking in with beliefs, because I think our beliefs just fuck us up constantly. And so, you know, when I believe something, because we make meaning out of so much shit, you know, so it's like, I've just come back from a retreat I was running and, you know, 3 days in the bush with all these women in the Coromandel, and it's like some of the beliefs they brought in, I'm like, is that true though? Is that really true? And this woman was going, oh yeah, well, my husband comes home at night and I've had a really busy day and he just starts vacuuming really vigorously and it pisses me off. And I'm like, okay. Why are you pissed off because your husband's vacuuming? Because I know a lot of women that would be really happy with a man vacuuming, right? So I'm like, talk to me more about what pisses you off. And she goes, well, you know what he's saying though, don't you? He's saying that I'm a shit housewife. And I went, but is he though? Like, is he saying that? Or is he just coming home and going, fucking the house is a bit messy and I like to sit down in a tidy space and actually burning off a bit of energy with a vacuum cleaner is probably a really good way for me to get some tension out of my body. So actually, I'm just going to do the vacuuming, and maybe he thinks he's helping. Like, I think you've made that up. And she's like, oh no, but you know, I'm a shit housewife. And I said, where'd that come from? Oh, my mother told me when I first got married, you know, you'll probably lose your husband because you're a shit housewife. And she's like, and I said, so you believe you're a shit housewife. So now you've made your husband doing vigorous vacuuming on a Wednesday night about you being a shit housewife. He's never said that. It's nothing to do with him. The poor bastard's just trying to tidy the house and sit down. And you're being a nightmare. And she's like, oh my God. And I said, do you get that? You've been carrying around this belief that your mother gave you on your wedding day of you're going to be a shit wife because you were messy. And you're still believing that. And is it true? And she goes, no. I said, are you a shit wife? She's like, no. I'm like, are you messy? She goes, no. And I said, right, so that's just a belief, because we carry all the shit around with us that we absorb, you know, from all different places. And I always go, yeah, but what's the belief sitting behind that thing you just said? And is that really true? Because I think we need to examine our belief systems, because we carry so many beliefs that aren't ours that we've just absorbed, picked up, contracted, you know, and it's like, what's the belief that's fucking you up right now? Which is usually, I'm not good enough. I'm not clever enough. I could never do this. I could not attain, you know, all that shit. And it's like, and I work with a lot of people who are self-employed who are literally just tripping over themselves because they're going, oh, but I'm not good enough and I'm not this enough and I'm not clever enough. And I'm like, oh my God, what if you were? Like, what if you were? Because who told you that, you know? So I think belief's another really good way to hack your way to doing better and having better.
But a lot of people ask the question, how do I get that self-belief? Like, you were dropped in the cauldron as a baby. We've understood that, right? I think that I got ridiculous self-belief because I happened to be very good at sports growing up. I played four different sports for North Harbour as I was growing up. And so I just, because like the biggest human sort of predictor of success is consistent small wins, right? And so I just had these, and I just grew this confidence because of sport to start with, and that continued on. Whereas my wife is the opposite. She was told all the bad things, and she still had hold on to some of those bad things, unfortunately. You got dropped in the cauldron. That was great. And so my question, I guess, is, like, for those of us not dropped in the cauldron, how do we find that self-belief? Because I think that is just one of the most, I think it's one of the biggest deficits that the average human has, straight up.
Yeah, I think so too. And so I think believing that you, I think belief starts, you need someone to believe in you. Someone has to believe in you for you until you can do it for yourself. And yep. some of us, like myself, was very lucky to have a parent who believed so deeply in me that I got that belief installed in me. And I've got like people that I mentor and I'm like, okay, so I believe in you and yeah. I'm going to believe in you until you can. So outsourcing your belief to someone else and going, just checking in with someone and going, do you believe that I can do this? And I'm like, yeah, I do. Cool. And then going, okay, well, do you trust me? Do you think I'm clever? They go, yeah. I go, cool. So if I believe it, do you think it's possible? They go, yeah, if you think it's possible, then I'm on board. And so outsourcing beliefs are a really good way to start.
I love that.
But I think, who believes in you? Like, that's a really good question. Like, for everyone listening, who is their person that believes in them? Who thinks that they've got this? And it's really interesting. I've now got my daughter is one of my biggest cheerleaders and biggest belief people. And she'll just be like, oh, this won't be hard for you. Like, she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I'm going here and I'm doing this. And she goes, that won't be hard for you. You're amazing. What a queen. And I'm like, oh, yeah, like, lovely. And it's so nice that it's gone full circle that she's like one of my biggest cheerleaders. And she's got that very big cheerleady kind of personality where she's deeply invested in supporting people to be their best. Yeah. And I love that she does that for me when I was that for her. But so everyone's got someone, you know, you've all got, can go back to a sports coach or a teacher, someone who believed in you once, and then look around and see who believes in you now. And, you know, really going deep in that, because we all need that that critic you're talking about, you know, that loving critic. But I think we also need someone who just unashamedly believes in you.
I agree with that. And I like that. There's people that are listening to this that will go, I don't have anyone, no one believes in me, right? That's the narrative that they're saying right now. And the cool thing is that there are people like you and me in this world who, after meeting you for half an hour or an hour, we will believe in you. Like, we will.
Yeah.
Like you said, you've got people that you mentor. I've got people that I mentor that I had no affiliation with before mentoring them. And it's like, yeah, like, fucking hell, I believe in you. Like, you're a smart, capable dude. Yeah, you can absolutely go do that. And just having
absolutely, and it's pretty simple. And it's a pretty simple recipe, I think. So for me, the recipe is like, if I met you for the first time and I said, what do you want to do? And you said, I want to do this. And I said, cool. Tell me about your experience. Tell me about your expertise. Tell me about what you're about. What do you believe in? What do you want? What do you love? What have you done? And they tell me that. I go, yeah, 100%. I can totally see how your past combined with your personality, combined with all the experiences you've had, means this thing over here is possible, right? So I go, yes, 100%. And it's just 1 + 2 = 3. It's pretty bloody simple. And like, if someone comes to me and goes, oh, well, I'm going to be a famous singer. And I go, okay, amazing. Can you sing? No. Have you ever sung? No. How old are you? 69 years old. Okay, probably not going to happen, pal. Right? I don't believe in you because you got no talent, you got no experience, and your voice is running out. So no. But if you come to me and go, I'm 40 and, you know, I've been an accountant my entire life and I'm a qualified chartered accountant and I'm going to help businesses to be better with their financials and run workshops, I go, fuck yeah, you can do that because you've got all the experience, all the expertise, you know what to do, and all we've got to do is find a way of creating a product that you can take to the world. So it's not really hard. You've got everything you need. And most of us, I have this really big belief that most of us who want something can achieve it, because if you couldn't, you wouldn't want it, right? So whatever you want, like, you wanted to build the biggest bloody water slide in the world, right? And you did.
Yep.
I've never wanted to build the biggest water slide in the world, and I didn't. And it's like, it's nowhere near of interest to me. So I think we all have these magical little things that we get in our brains or in our energies that we want to do. I really like, have you read Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert? Her book? Stunning, stunning, stunning book. Okay. So Elizabeth Gilbert wrote Eat, Pray, Love. That wasn't her best work. That was a terrible middle-aged crisis woman sort of leaving her marriage and shagging
in.
Made her a lot of money. It was not her best work. Her best work is Big Magic. It is phenomenal. Okay. It's a book about thinking creatively. And I don't mean being creative, like going to Spotlight and buying arts and crafts. I mean using your brain to think creatively. And she talks a lot in there about how people don't have ideas. Ideas have people. Mm. And I think ideas, like the idea of the biggest water slide in the world, landed on your shoulder and you went, yeah, I reckon, let's go. And you made that happen, right? Yeah. And so I think when we get an idea, it's up to us to make that happen. And I think we've got things we want to make happen. And if you asked everyone in a room who wants to make this happen, everyone's got a different thing. And I think we've all got the ability to make those things happen. And that's why we want them, why we're, you know, crazy about them. Like, how many people have you met that have the same aspirations as you? Not many, right?
No.
Because you're you.
Exactly. Yeah. And not that you know this, but the day after this comes out in 2 weeks' time, I will be walking the length of New Zealand. So from Cape Town to Bluff, and less than 100 days. So quite quickly. And
Chef, how many Ks are you doing a day?
About 35 Ks a day.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so, but this is the thing, right? Is that people are like, oh, you reckon you can do it? You reckon you're going to make it? Yeah, like there's not even a spot that resides in my brain that I'm not going to make this.
Exactly.
So how did you make this happen? Well, I couldn't afford it when I decided, but then just I decided to do it, and now it's all magically sorted itself out. You're like, oh, okay. It's because everything comes off the back of doing. And so many of us paralyze ourselves with the thinking or the talking.
Yep.
Whereas if we just do the doing, then the thinking and the talking actually work themselves out.
Action's everything, Ben. Action is everything. And it's like every time, if everyone who had an idea just got up and walked towards that idea and did one thing to get them closer to that idea, everything idea would happen. People just go, I've got an idea, and they lie on the couch for 6 years with their idea. And I'm
literally
like,
so many people said, I had the idea to build the world's biggest water slide. I was like, cool, how'd that go for you?
Yeah. Oh, did you do it? No.
Yeah, no. Well, I did do it. And was I qualified to do it? Did I have the money to do it? Did I have the support to do it? Did I have any of these things? No, I did not. I just made
it. Yes, you did it.
And then I took small, actionable steps forward. And so often, when we think that it takes 1,000 steps to get to a goal, we don't quite understand that aggregation of marginal gains, which is kind of just like the snowball effect. You roll the first little ball, the little ball, and it takes effort, it takes work, and then it starts rolling. And then you just hold on for the ride, and suddenly it's happening. Like, this walk has just magically materialized. Like, all of these things. People have given me food and sorted me out and accommodation and all of this sort of stuff. I was like, how did that even happen? Like, where did they even come from? How did that sort of turn up? And it just happened because I started making the processes for it to happen. But if I hadn't made those processes, none of that stuff would have happened.
Exactly.
Pretty simple.
Action is huge, man. Action is huge. And that's also action and trust, which is there for me, the intersection of belief. So the actions of what you do, and then the trusting that this will work, and the, you know, the universe will have your back, and this is going to happen, and it's all good. And it's like, it's just for the greater good that you do this walk.
And if it doesn't work, then you're just going to end up in the right place anyway. Right. That's one of the things is like, it's all very good for us to plan for things, but I just love the idea that we don't know what's right for us. Like, who are we to know? Like, so often we're like, this is right for me, and it turns into a complete and utter disaster. Like, we're just wrong so often. I think that comes from knowing too much,
doesn't it? Yeah, but it comes from ego, and it comes from I know, and I'm very, and it's like,
it does,
how about if you didn't know?
Exactly. But that's what happens is that if you know, you think you know, you think you know, you think you know, you think you know, and it all falls apart, but then suddenly you end up in this new place of like, ah, this is an interesting place. And now I've got all these new perspectives. I happen to meet these new and interesting people in this utter catastrophe of failure. I now have to go in this direction, which leads me to the life that I actually wanted, even though I didn't know I wanted it at the time.
Mm.
But without those forward steps and that forward momentum, we're all just sitting on the same log back where we started. Yeah.
And I love the theory. Like, I have a huge belief that my life works for me and not against me, and that the world works for me. So everything that happens is for me, not against me. And I've always thought that. And one of my biggest disappointments in my life was I applied for a scholarship when I was in high school, and I missed out to go and live overseas for a year. And I was I had it in the bag, and everyone around me was convinced I had it in the bag. And all my teachers said, oh, they're going to take you. And there was, you know, five kids in four places. And everyone was like, you're a shoo-in. This is 100% yours. And you should just buy a suitcase now, because it's going to happen. And everyone was pissing in my pocket going, this is so going to happen. And I didn't get in. And I was the kid that missed out when I was supposedly the kid that everyone thought was shoo-in. And I was devastated. I was humiliated. I was horrified. I was 17. It was, and do you know, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to me that I missed out on that. Like, when I looked at what happened to those other four kids that did that program, and I look at what I achieved in the following year that I wouldn't have done had I not been on that program, there was just so much in it. And I think, we don't know what's right for us, and shit happens, and you don't know why until later. And shit happens to me all the time, and I think, fuck, this doesn't suit me, but at some level it must, and I just have to keep calm and carry on until, and then I'll find out. Then I'll find out what it's about, right?
Well, that's the Taoist proverb of maybe. It's the Chinese farmer. This happens, good or bad.
Yep.
Maybe. Good or bad. Yeah. Maybe.
Good or bad.
Because we don't know what's good or bad. Best thing that ever happened to me, getting depression. Second best thing that ever happened to me, my wife leaving me. What the fuck? Like, and so with, you know, with 15 years perspective on that, I can absolutely say 100% that those are the two best things that ever happened to me. And you just,
and they,
like,
didn't feel like it at the time, did they?
Oh, they did not. Oh, they did not. But I, like, there's not a million lives I would never change. I would never change those if I could relive it. Insane. Last question for you. You turned 50. You wrote a book about the things you've learned. When I was 38, 4 years ago, I wrote a 38 lessons that I learned. Very similar. I want to know, just to finish off, what's your number one? What's your number one lesson that you've learned in your 50-plus years on this planet?
It's probably number 50 in the book. It depends how good you are with swearing. Number 50 is just don't be a cunt. It's pretty simple. Just don't be awful. The world just doesn't need it. Like, there's just so much in the world, and people are just awful, and I just don't understand why people, you know, hurt people, and people are in pain, and there's lots of reasons out there, but I just go, oh, come on, man, like, just don't be awful. And I want to walk around with it on a t-shirt. I'm just like, can you just not be awful, please? Because there's so much out there that people just don't understand, and everyone's going through something hard, and it just blows my mind that people are so awful to other people, and people are angry and grumpy and badly behaved, and I'm like, can you just not be, like, it's not okay, you know, just don't be awful. And yeah, when I wrote that in the book, oh dear. So I got in lots of trouble, and people sent the book back and said, oh, you can't say this, and this is inappropriate, and yada, yada, bloody yada. And I'm like, yeah, but there's so much. I did it for a little bit of shock factor, because I don't hate shock. You know, I quite like it. But I'm just like, it's important that people sort of just realize that at any time their behavior is a choice. And I don't think people realize that. Like, I'm like, the point is that being grumpy is a choice, and no one benefits when you're constantly grumpy or miserable. And most people are actually unconsciously even just attention seeking, and they get to choose their mood, and being in charge of their mood and spreading people's bad attitudes is just bullshit. And people say, oh, I've had a really bad day.
Do you know what else they can choose? What? They can choose their reaction to stimulus. They can choose
100%.
They can choose their feelings based on a stimulus. Yep. And why I say that, why it's funny, is because people send the book back because they're offended.
Yeah.
And you're like, offense is a choice.
100%. And I love saying that just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right. And I've had people go, I'm sending this book back because it's got a horrible word. I'm like, it hasn't. It's got a C, two stars and a T. You can do what you want with that word.
But you didn't even type it out in full.
Whatever. I don't even care. Like, it's like, I don't care what you made that. I don't, but I love that word. And so it's a really funny story that my daughter came in from school one day, threw her bag. She was 16. She threw her bag down on the floor and said, my maths teacher's a cunt. And my husband went mental and said, oh, you can't say that. That's not appropriate. You can't use that word. And he was really offended. And she turned around and she said, you've got a dick and you call people dicks all the time. I've got a cunt. I'll use it however I like. It's my word. You don't get to tell me what to say. And walked off. And I was like, literally the proudest parenting
Slow
moment
clap.
Of my life.
Slow
it was such a mic drop. Oh, I was fast clapping, man. I was like, that is the proudest parenting moment of my life. And Matt was looking at me going, this is all your fault. Like, you've created this monster.
Yes,
and I'm like,
was.
Yeah, I know.
Yes,
I'm
yes.
so Thank proud you. Because she's owning that word and she's going, don't tell me what word I can use. And I just, yeah, it just makes me laugh. And so I kind of put it in there to poke people a little bit. But people were so busy being offended. And I'm like, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And offended's a choice. And just calm down. I pride myself on not being offended. I couldn't be offended. There's nothing you could say to me that would offend me because it's a choice and it just makes me laugh. So, yeah.
I like it.
That's
well, number Lisa, one. I'm sure the people enjoyed this. I hope they got a whole bunch of actionable things out of it. If they would like to know more about you, check out your books or anything else you got going, where should they find you?
Oh, well, it's very easy. Lisa O'Neill, L-I-S-A. O-N-E-I-L-L.co.nz. Everything's there. There's books there. There's retreats. There's all kinds of stuff. I've got a blog I write if people want to read stuff. Got a podcast coming out, actually, in January, 1st of January. I'm launching my new podcast, so that's exciting.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Good. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a lovely way to spend an hour yabbering with you, with a like-minded soul. It's been gorgeous. Thank you.
All right.
That was Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt. See you next time.